My guest at this time is Larry Sabato, professor of political science at the University of Virginia. He is also director of UVA's Center for Politics, and he joins me now to take a look back at 2014, the year in review in the world of politics, particularly American politics. And Larry, thanks very much for being with us. Happy New Year. Hope you had a Merry Christmas.
Thank you so much, Greg. I did, and same to you. Happy New Year.
Thank you, sir. Well, let's start with the midterms. Most of the political year was geared towards building up towards them. Your final predictions were quite accurate, as they always are. Republicans made gains in the House. Turns out they're the most they've had since the Hoover years. We'll see if that's an omen for them or not. And a pickup of 9, which is actually a couple more than you predicted, in the Senate. Now, of course,
One more than we predicted. We had it 53-47. It's 54-46.
Yeah, so pretty good.
We missed one race.
Yeah, you did better than I did. So in terms of why this happened, of course, you have some saying it's just dissatisfaction with the president. It's the six-year itch. Republicans saying it's a mandate for their agenda. What's the best read here?
Well, it's always a combination, but midterm elections inevitably are a reflection of the popularity or unpopularity of the White House. And remember, it's all about turnout. You always have a low turnout with midterm elections, so you always ask which side is more energized. Well, clearly Republicans were. They were angry at the White House. They had a long list of grievances after 6 years, and Democrats were not excited anymore. You know, the bloom's off the rose, and that usually happens in the sixth year. Doesn't always happen, but usually happens, because by then the partisans of the guy in the White House realize that nirvana will not be occurring. Mm. You're not going to have all those promises fulfilled that were made in the original election.
Larry, one of the things that's been very interesting since the midterm, of course, is that most people would see this as a chastening of the president. He apparently hasn't taken it that way. In fact, the press conference the day after, he said he not only heard the voters, but the people who didn't vote. And his actions since then, whether it's immigration, whether it's the Cuba policy recently, seems to be very much going against the way presidents normally react to midterms like that.
Yes, this is going to be an interesting 2 years. I think there'll be a fair number of executive actions, executive orders. There'll be all kinds of things that he will do independently, because he knows that he's not going to be able to get anything substantial through Congress unless it's something like a trade pact, the Asia trade pact, something like that might go through. But on the whole, this is not going to be a productive 2 years in Congress, simply because the president and Congress disagree about almost everything. Also, we need to remember, even though Republicans have taken control of the Senate, they don't have full control. On matters other than most appointments, you still need 60 votes to get something through, and Republicans have 54. It's tough to find 6 Democrats who are going to vote for the things that Republicans want. So I just look at this as an extension of gridlock. But we also should recall that presidents in their last 2 years end up being limited by public opinion, if nothing else. Their time is ending. Dramatic actions can be reversed by the next president. And on the whole, I don't think that the next 2 years will be dramatic as far as presidential congressional action goes.
And, of course, by the time Labor Day rolls around, most people will be focused on the presidential race for 2016, which we'll get to in a minute, Larry. But in terms of the incoming Republican majorities now in both the House and Senate, you mentioned it's largely going to be gridlock. I think most people would expect that. What issues do you think either the White House or the Congress are likely to focus on that'll be the biggest flashpoints for the next 2 years?
Well, immigration's one, clearly, and Republicans will try to defund some of what President Obama had in his executive order. Obviously, the Congress is going to try and trim back Obamacare. They realize a full repeal would just be vetoed, and they don't have enough votes in either house to override a presidential veto. But they could do some things. If they can get, for example, the medical device tax repealed, it's possible Obama will sign that, because even many Democratic groups oppose that particular tax. So, you know, they'll try and trim back Obamacare. In the foreign sphere, you just never know what's going to happen. The world is popping again, unfortunately. And the president and his people will be called to account a great deal more, because you can have joint investigation committees between both the House and the Senate. They can work together in a way that they couldn't when one party controlled one House and the other party controlled the other House.
Larry, let's go back to the president kind of doing the opposite of what a lot of folks would expect to do after a pretty humbling midterm election, and that's more appealing to the base and doing things that are not going to win him too many popular opinion polls. But what does this mean for the presumptive, and this, of course, was the word that cost her last time, Hillary Clinton, the presumptive Democratic nominee, if the president is doing things that are appealing to the base but not to the vast majority of Americans, how does she handle that?
Well, Hillary Clinton thinks that she'll be able to associate herself with a prior Democratic president, Bill Clinton. She'll say, you know, did you like what happened in the 90s, at least economically, then elect me. But American history would suggest that it's very difficult to do that. The nominee of the incumbent president's party has to bear witness for the incumbent president's actions. And if the incumbent president's very unpopular at election time, it's awfully difficult to win that third term. So I think she'll discover this as time goes on. But, of course, we're in the dreaming phase of the presidential campaign. It's where everybody and his brother and sister thinks they could be nominated, and they've got a plan they can tell you that convinces you that, yep, it's going to be all about them. But, of course, in the vast majority of the cases, it cannot be.
Well, let's talk a little bit about how crowded you think this field might get. The Republican Senate conference luncheon room is probably going to have a few tables full of people who think they're going to be the next president of the United States. So how does that complicate business both in Washington and beyond? How much work generally gets done in the 2 years leading up to a presidential election?
If the Congress is going to get anything done or even pass symbolic legislation, they're going to have to do a lot of it in the first year, because by the late fall, if not before, of 2015, your presidential candidates will be in Iowa, New Hampshire, and South Carolina almost all the time, where they'll be raising money in fundraisers all over the country. And every vote matters in the Senate. It's very difficult to get those 60 votes or even to get the 54 that Senator McConnell, the new majority leader, is going to have to keep together in order to make the Senate work. So it's not a pleasant prospect, but it's a lot more pleasant to be in the majority under any condition than to be in the minority.
Larry, what about Republican leaders here? They've obviously got responsibilities as being the leaders of the majority party in both the House and Senate. Their conferences are not necessarily in lockstep, as we've just witnessed over the latest budget fight. But there's been a number of skirmishes over the past 4 years since Republicans took the House. You've got a lot of conservatives, of course, who want to see the Republican majorities do more than they've done to this point. And so there's an expectations game to manage. There's an accomplishments game to manage, to basically go back and tell your voters you deserve reelection. So how tough of a job is that?
Well, it's very difficult. The solution, obviously, is to find a certain number of things, for example, a trade pact that both houses and the president can agree on. You get four or five of those things done. You're able to say, you see, we weren't just the party of no. We weren't just refusing to cooperate. We accomplished these things. And at the same time, you have to keep the base happy, which means maybe you have votes on abolishing Obamacare. And of course, Obama would veto anything like that. But it would excite the base. It would prove to the base that their votes mattered, that they're being heard. So that's probably what we'll see. It'll be fence straddling to some degree, but it is a balancing act, and you have to do both things.
Well, from election year to governing year, and then pretty soon on to the campaign year for 2016. Larry, I hope your crystal ball is getting a well-deserved rest. I'm sure it'll be back in business pretty soon here.
We're polishing it. We're getting it ready for the next cycle.
As always. Larry, always great to talk to you. Again, Happy New Year. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Greg.
Larry Sabatow, professor of political science at the University of Virginia, director of UVA's Center for Politics. I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.